Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode. I am hanging out in Orlando. So I just got done with FinCon, and Tony and I extended our trip to do a little bit of Disney World. So I've been learning a ton about Disney World, and I'm hoping to share all of my findings and more budget-friendly tips for you guys in another episode and maybe even a blog post. So I'm not quite sure the format yet, but Disney World has been amazing. It's a ton of fun, and it is exhausting. I know everybody says that, but oh my God, it is seriously so tiring to just walk around in the heat and the humidity. I don't know. If you've been to Disney World, I think you totally understand where I'm coming from, but we've been having a really good time. It's just exciting to get back to the grind. Today, I'm really excited to share with you. This has been a fun episode. This is with Joni Simons, who I met at a conference not that long ago, and I really loved everything that Joni is doing. So before we dive into all of Joni's amazingness, let's share with you my favorite segment of the day, which is our hashtag Money Wins. This money win comes from Coco. She says, I've been looking for a badass podcast to help inspire me and keep me on track. I feel like I really found that in the Money Nerds. Last month, I cut my spending drastically by switching from a new car to a new / used car, moving into a place that cost me $1,000 less in rent. Rent can be crazy in LA, banning myself from Grubhub and focusing that money towards paying off all of my debt. It's official. I've paid off the first of 7 debts. I'm going the highest to lowest APR route. So that's the debt avalanche. I appreciate this group and the amazing discussions that are happening here. And Whitney Hansen, you rock. Thank you for creating a safe and inspiring place. Hashtag money win. Coco, you are amazing. First of 7 debts. Congrats to you. And I can only imagine all of those changes that you've made have probably been very, very difficult. So I appreciate and admire you for making those tough calls. Way to go. That is exactly how you're going to get some really great results. Guys, if you want to join in the conversation and hang out with people like Coco and myself, then go to Facebook and search for the group Manage Your Money Like a Boss. From there, you'll be able to join in. You can go through all of the different discussions. It's an extremely active group and an extremely supportive group. So you will definitely have a good time in there, and you can get answers to any and all of your questions. So either go to Facebook and search for it or click in the show notes and you'll see the link in there. All right, let's dive into today's guest. Joni Simon is a professional food photographer, online educator, wife, mom, and potato enthusiast based in Phoenix, Arizona. She loves working with food brands and restaurants to tell their stories through creative food photography and styling. Joni founded The Bite Shot on YouTube in 2017 in an effort to help shorten the learning curve for new food photographers and bring the food photography industry a little bit closer. In this episode, we talk about her background in art history, in counseling, and the love of cooking, and how all of those different things prepared her for a food photography business. We discuss overcoming alcoholism, growing a YouTube channel that has over 67,000 subscribers, some of her secrets to taking really beautiful, stunning food photos, why she believes in collaborating versus competition when it comes to other food photographers, how she made her first dollar in the business, where she actually goes to find clients, and even a behind-the-scenes look into her first course that made $18,000 in just 1 week with zero paid advertising. Guys, Joni is a rock star. I think you are going to love hearing her story. I am so excited to introduce you to Joni Simon from thebiteshot.com. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. Today I am joined by one of my new friends, Joni Simon from thebiteshot.com. Joni, I am so excited to talk with you on the podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to chat with you too.
Well, I love to, because so we met at a conference here in Boise, Idaho, where I live, and we were talking a little bit about business and what we each do. And you mentioned you were a food photographer, which is so amazing. So can you take us back a little bit into how did you get started into food photography to begin with?
Yeah, well, I feel like so much of my journey is just like and there's not a lot of intention behind it. It's all been very accidental, like showing up at the right place, doing the right thing, you know, and just kind of following my heart. And suddenly I found myself in a career and a full-time business that I'm very proud to own and be a part of. And so, yeah, just as far as like, you know, we could trace back way, way back, but as far as where the food photography really started, my background, my undergraduate degree is in art history. So I've always had an appreciation for the arts and the fine arts and visual arts specifically, but never saw that as something that I could legitimately make money at. You know, I'm a very typical firstborn child. Like, I need to work in business, or I need to be a lawyer. I need to do something that's going to be lucrative and pay the bills. And so art was never something that I thought I would necessarily pursue professionally, but I also didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do with my life. So studied art history, but then followed a career path into counseling and student higher administration, student counseling, which was a lot of fun. I love teaching. I love students. I love working with people and coaching people. And so that kind of tapped into a different part of my personality. But at a certain point, you know, I got into the world of higher education and, you know, just kind of lost interest as I continued to kind of gain the ranks and realize I wasn't interacting with students as much as I was administering programs and things that I didn't really love. And so I thought, you know what, I'm making $30,000 a year to work 80 hours a week in something I'm not totally loving. So it's time to move direction. So I jumped into the family business at that point, just kind of quit the higher education, figured, well, I've got this master's degree in counseling, but you know, who knows what I'll do with that in the future. But went to go work in sales for my father at a small technology company selling point of sale systems to restaurants. So definite departure. And as you'll see kind of in my journey, I have no problem sort of quitting something cold turkey and just running in a completely opposite direction. I don't know where that comes from in my DNA, but
skill.
So for the most part, it has served me well to this day. So, started working for the family business in sales, which was eye-opening, working in a for-profit business situation, learning kind of the business basics, like on the job, understanding, you know, profit and loss and all those very valuable things you'd learn in business school. And so I was getting to learn those kind of firsthand, as well as how to effectively sell, as well as it was selling to the restaurant industry. So I really started to connect with a lot of chefs and restaurant personalities. And that's when I suddenly reignited what has always been there, is a love of food. Ever since I was super little, like fifth grade, asking my mom if I could make dinner for the family. And that's just always been a part of who I am. And so I started then, like most of us do, a blog all about food and restaurants, and started interviewing chefs, but then also reignited my own love of cooking. And so along with that, as the world of the blogosphere goes, it's important to complement a recipe with a great photograph. And so I had the basics of like an artistic vision of understanding, okay, I want to photograph this meal that I've just prepared, but not necessarily understanding cameras or photography, but certainly giving it a go with my very first DSLR camera. And so it's one of those things, you kind of start down this path and you suddenly fall in love with something. And that's where photography kind of became this really enjoyable art for me, that it really married that art history degree and that love of the visual arts, but then also bringing food into it, into this very unique niche that has evolved very rapidly, just, you know, within even the last 10 years, that everybody is taking pictures of what they're eating. And so for me, that was very helpful and timely. And so at that point, so the blogging was always like this side gig, this kind of thing that I enjoyed, but I was like, I don't know if I could ever take this full time. But at a certain point, as life happens, I got to this point is in 2014, and, you know, realized once again, I was in a job working crazy hours, but not necessarily loving it. And also had some sort of personal epiphanies in terms of, I was at the time struggling with an addiction to alcohol and alcohol abuse. But not outwardly sharing that, of course, with everybody. A very high functioning alcoholic is how you could classify the behavior at the time. And so, fortunately, through a series of events and an amazing husband, and I think some divine intervention, I finally came to realize that I needed to, you know, really straighten some things out, because it's not the alcohol necessarily, it's some deeper rooted issues just in terms of self-worth and self-value and, you know, workaholism and all those things kind of coming together and realizing I need to put the brakes on all of this and really clarify for myself, like, what's important to me? Who am I? What do I value? And so at that point I, you know, stepped into a life of recovery and then looked at, okay, I've got this sales job and I'm doing incredibly well at it. And it's supporting our family of four, but I'm not happy. This isn't fueling my creative passions because I'm very innately a creative person. And so, had one of those crazy moments in a parking lot in the car and said, oh my gosh, I need to quit my job, which at the time made no sense. Cause I'm just, you know, kind of a hobby blogger. I'm not a professional food photographer. None of that was on the horizon at that point. It was just kind of stuff I was doing for fun, but I kind of had this sense that that was where I needed to be. And I need to be doing that full time with my full passion and not distracted by, you know, trying to pursue a job just simply for a paycheck, but really, you know, follow those crazy dreams. So I drove straight back to the office from a sales call and went and quit my job, and just dually difficult because it was the family business. And so I had to tell my dad I didn't want to work there anymore. And
sorry, Dad.
I know. Unfortunate for me, he was super duper supportive and just said, hey, you know, whatever you need to do, you know, you got to put yourself first and take care of you. And so, you know, that's been an incredibly important part of my journey is just, you know, a lot of really great support around me. But what was fortunate is that, yeah, I was able to quit that job. We had just refinanced our house at that time. So that was perhaps a little helpful cushion to know that, you know, if I quit my job that day, we did have some funds to live off for at least a year's time. So instead of remodeling our kitchen at the time, we just, you know, sat on that as I sort of had to kind of figure out, okay, what are we doing? And, you know, as a creative person, I think you need time and space to, you know, let the creativity come. It's not something you can force. And so when you're used to operating at a very high speed, high energy, full force, that, you know, it's good to take some time to step back. And so quitting my job enabled me to do that. And I spent a whole month just not doing anything, which I'd never done in my whole entire life.
Tell us more about that. So that period of not doing anything, there had to have been some like soul searching or something going on. Oh, so what did that look like?
Huge. So for me, you know, I love to pour myself into projects and work. And so being forced to not work was very, as terrible as it sounds, because everybody's like, oh my gosh, like a whole entire month to do nothing. That sounds amazing. But I was like, it was completely unnerving because I'm like, I'm getting behind the eight ball. I'm missing out. I'm screwing up. This is kind of adverse to my nature. But it ended up being so important because at that point, then all of a sudden I just really started to get back into cooking and taking photos and realized, oh my gosh, I love this. I love my camera. I love my kitchen. I don't know how any of this turns into a business, but I'm just going to really focus on food blogging and see how I can perhaps make a living at this or not make a living at it. But there was a certain part of me that just trusted that this would work. And also it's like that moment, you know, people always ask, oh my God, how did you just like quit your job cold turkey and not know there was any income coming in the other side? Because my husband had been full-time stay at home with the kids too. So he kind of had to launch back into the workforce. But, you know, part of it was, I always said, what's the worst that would happen? Like, we're never going to be homeless. You know, we have family. We could move in with family. I mean, that would be kind of the least favorable option to move into the in-laws, but you know, like
it's an option.
It's an option, right? Like what is the absolute worst? And, you know, I have great family and I have good people. And so let's just try this. Okay. We lose our house. It wouldn't have happened in vain because then at least, you know, and so, took that leap, took that month to really kind of realign and kind of soul search and process through also those early days of recovery, and then really just started writing about it and started to put together then a rebranded blog under my name, and so JoniSimon.com. But inevitably then in the course of all of that, the photography, as you can now tell through the story, the photography really came to a forefront of that whole mission. And then about a year ago, launched a YouTube channel just teaching other bloggers how to improve their food photography. And before you knew it, it was taken off like wildfire, just in terms of, you know, my own personal experience with YouTube and gaining a followership. And so it was really exciting to get to engage with other photographers everywhere. And this amazing moment of clarity of going, oh my gosh, okay, not only am I using that art history degree for the creative, you know, composition of images and colors and all the things that go into creating a really beautiful photograph, as well as then my love of food, but then too now, as an online educator of food photography through YouTube and my online courses, I get to bring back that component of my higher education days and understanding how to teach college students and how to effectively teach for learning. And so it's just one of those things you go back and go, I would have never put all of these things together, but in this amazing modern economy that we're in, all of those things go together so, so well.
That's amazing. I love how you mentioned that every single piece of your journey didn't seem to fit when you were going through it, but in hindsight, it's like everything fit together really well. And I think that's super interesting. One of the things that I love so much too is with the YouTube channel. Tell me, okay, so I know that it seems to be a lot of luck sometimes with YouTube, but I don't think that's the case. So what was going on when you were growing the channel to begin with? What did a typical day growing that channel look like?
Yeah. Well, what was interesting and is helpful too is that I've got sort of some also additional experience with YouTube 2 years prior to that with the food blog. I launched a food YouTube channel that never went anywhere. And really, I mean, it still exists there, but never really gained any traction. And I felt like just another person on YouTube going like, nobody's following me. Nobody's seeing this. Why am I doing this? Right. And so launching this photography channel, the early days, the very first 5 videos were purely out of a necessity for me because I would constantly get asked by bloggers, other people interested in food photography, you know, how do you operate a camera in manual? And like, what's the big, and a lot of people just say, how do I improve my photography? Mm-hmm. Well, I say, first step is to learn how to shoot in manual. And so I thought, you know what, I just want to put this resource out there so that I don't have to keep telling people on a one-to-one basis how to do it, that I can just have these videos and refer them to other people. Cause I also had started to host some small scale workshops in the Phoenix area, teaching people food photography. And so I felt like that was just a really helpful resource because I knew if I could give them this link to these 5 videos in this playlist, then they would have a certain baseline of knowledge. And then from there, I could really help them build on top of that. So really, it kind of was built out of necessity. And the very early days too, it didn't really gain a whole lot of organic traction either. You know, it was similar to the other channel, just in terms of, you know, person pop in here, person pop in there. You know, I did add an Instagram account to kind of supplement it because that seemed to go really hand in hand, obviously, as a visual platform. But what really sort of changed it and suddenly made me realize, oh, there's something here is that I did start to gain, you know, a small audience. And, you know, they always say the very first 100 subscribers on YouTube is the hardest. And it absolutely is. Like, that is like climbing a mountain to get your very first 100 subscribers. But somebody had requested, just a viewer request said, can you go through what are the essential pieces of gear like that you would need as a food photographer to get started? And I was like, oh, that's a great topic. So I went ahead and made a video out of that. And I think it was a combination of certainly something that's a high demand piece of content. There are a lot of people starting out in the food blogging world or starting out in the photography world, food photography, who are very specifically interested in like, what do I buy? Where do I start? Seriously, and so that was a very helpful resource for a lot of people. But then too, it's just in terms of the keyword structure of that title, it was very searchable. And then also existing videos that already lived in YouTube that were popular with similar titles, then I was becoming a referred video. And that's where a lot, I think, you know, if you look at the analytics side of my YouTube channel, not so much now, it's kind of grown its own legs and followers and, you know, kind of really carved its own little area. But definitely in the early days, so much of the traffic was gained out of existing other videos from other channels that were doing well, popular videos. And that I would then be that next video at the end of that video, they refer like, you might also like these videos. And so that was a bulk of my traffic and a great opportunity then for people who had never heard of me to discover what I was doing. So unfortunately, I deliver value then in the videos that I do serve. And so they stick around.
That's amazing. So what has been the most popular video for you today?
You know, I'd have to look at it, but it's kind of, it goes between several. One of the most popular, because again, I think it really hits a keyword that a lot of people from a trend in the food photography world look for, is dark food photography. It's a term, you know, just as far as like these really dark and moody photos that are a lot of black and shadows. And it's not necessarily something that you would intuitively just know how to do. There is a certain amount of technique and building of a set and scene and different tools that you need to achieve that kind of look. And so that video has been extremely popular because I think it's highly searched just in terms of that keyword in the title. But then also it just, you know, I think it gets a lot of shares and a lot of reposts and social media action as well. And then I've got another video about food styling and what are 17 tools to help that any food stylist would have in their repertoire as far as tweezers and makeup sponges and glycerin and a blowtorch and all these things that food stylists use. Yeah.
What are you using a blowtorch for? I've got to know.
Sorts of things. I mean, certainly to do the caramelization on the creme brulee, but it, you know, it comes in handy if I ever need to char the side of something, or you got a burger and it looks good, but you just need a little extra like crispiness on the edge.
That's
yeah, there's, oh, the tools get hilarious, and you know, there's a lot of makeup tools involved, and so people think that's really fun. And what's fun too is I think that, you know, it is the world of food photography. There's a certain kind of mystique and fun to it. So there are even people who say in the comments, like, I have no interest in food photography, but I find all of this wildly fascinating.
Well, I think this is me. That's why I get so entranced in your Instagram, because you show these gorgeous shots and I'm like, oh, that is so perfect. And then you scroll to the next image and it's like the craziness behind the scenes.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and you know, that's something that was such a value for me from day one, and I think has also helped attribute to the success, is really just being fully transparent with people. Like, this is janky on the background, and anybody who's doing this kind of work, as magical and as beautiful it is, Bon Appetit magazine and Sur La Table and all these fabulous outlets, I know for a fact behind the scenes there's somebody running around with a piece of black poster board and, you know, propping things up with spackle, and it's, you just do what you got to do to get the job done. So it's not quite as glamorous as you think. It's a lot more, you know, grunt work, and you know, it's messy. And so it's a lot of fun to see that. And I think that, you know, I just really wanted to share that with people, because I know that I had always been so intimidated, like, oh, I probably don't have the right gear, and oh, I'm just not fancy enough. Yeah. And you know, all those sort of self-defeating things that you think, I can't do this because, and I just want people to realize, no, you do not need all sorts of fancy things in order to create a career out of this and to do this professionally and to create beautiful images. It's really the creativity and, you know, your eye and so much of your own personal taste that you bring to it that really is what separates images from others.
When you first started showing the more behind the scenes look, were there very many people doing that at that time?
No, there were not. You know, I think the photography world, well, the photography world in general for a long, long time has always been very secretive. You know, you don't share your secrets and to ask a photographer how they do things, you know, but there definitely are folks that had gone before me who I had seen stuff, you know, Helen Dujardin, who's a really popular and amazing food photographer. And she'd occasionally post stuff in her stories, and I'd seen things like that. And I went, oh, see,
that's how they do it.
They do it. Exactly. And so I knew how valuable those things for me had been. There weren't like any standard outlets doing it on a regular basis that I could find, you know, not to say that there weren't, I just wasn't finding them. So that's when I thought, you know what, I just want to be fully transparent and put this out there, you know, share camera settings, share everything. Cause that's the other thing too. People say, well, aren't you training your competition? And I say, well, you know, there's so much work to be had out there that, you know, there is no sense of scarcity. And fortunately too, as a result of building this platform and, you know, it's a really great marketing arm for my own photography business. And so, you know, I've got more business than I need at this point. You know, I turn down work on a regular basis because there really is so much work to be had out there. And so I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to help support other people to achieve, you know, their own creative businesses and to succeed at that.
It's amazing. I think it's so interesting to just see how everything's progressed so well. One of the big things that I think for most people starting off, even photographers or food photographers or bloggers or coaches or anyone really, is mm-hmm. making that first dollar. It seems to be such a stumbling block. So what was your first dollar where you were actually paid in your business?
Yeah. So my very first dollar came before I started doing it full time. And it was doing photography for a restaurant, a local restaurant, because I had been, you know, doing the food blog and sharing stuff on social media through my food blog, and a restaurant saw it. And for some reason, I was like, hey, you know, you looks like you do photography. Can you come shoot our menu? And I was like, well, yes. Oh my God, what am I going to do? Right? Like, I'm freaking out. And I was like, I have no business doing this. But, you know, that's, I think, another sort of marker of what's helped me be successful is jumping at those opportunities mm-hmm. that I didn't feel quite ready for. Like, in my head, I could, you know, I could reason myself out of it and say, oh no, I'm not ready for that. But in my heart, I knew, no, I have what I need. This is going to grow me. This is going to push me. This is going to be scary, but I'm able to do it. And I think that jumping at those opportunities has every single time been so valuable, so worth it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is too, you know, you think it, well, okay, I'm jumping at an opportunity. What's the worst that could happen? Right. Right. It's my continued saying, like, what's the worst that could happen? They hate the photos. Okay. Right. Like,
refund them. No big deal.
Right. Exactly. Then they can go find another photographer. Like, unfortunately that hasn't happened, but at the same time, that's the reality. And so, okay, that's the worst that could happen. I can, it's not life or death here. So right. That's a really helpful piece of the pie.
I think that's such a good life skill for everybody to learn too is, and it maybe, I mean, I don't know if some of that came from the sales training too, because in sales you hear no all the time. It's like a normal thing. So I think that's really fascinating to hear that was helping you as well.
Yeah.
So for those that are listening in that are thinking of potentially pursuing a career in food photography that think it's overly saturated or everyone's doing it, so why there's no place for me, how did they get started and make themselves different, I guess, would be a bigger question.
Yeah. You know, I think a good part of any journey is certainly just putting the pure work into it. You know, I didn't get good at food photography overnight. You know, it's many, many hours, lots of time invested, but I'm extremely passionate about it. So for me, getting in the studio and playing with food and lights and picture, you know, cameras, that's what I do to de-stress as well as what I do for work. So I'd say it's definitely putting in the time to really cultivate what makes you unique and what it is that you love. And so for me, over time, that my aesthetic has evolved. And that's the fortunate thing too, is that every single person, just like a fingerprint, has a unique creative approach. And the more that you understand the tools that are at your disposal, then you can really let that creativity come out and that unique voice and ability that you have. But you know, the thing with photography, you know, certainly you could be unique and add some new element to it, new voice, but at the same time too, you know, as somebody who I do commercial photography and shooting for a lot of brands and clients, that they have their own aesthetics that I'm, you know, having to create and craft toward. And so whenever somebody's considering working in the world, you know, the world of commercial photography in general, whether it's food or otherwise, is that the best photographers are not the highest paid photographers, that, you know, so much of it really does come down to marketing yourself and getting out there and knocking on doors and understanding who the players are in your space. You know, in the food photography realm, it's a lot of working directly with PR agencies who most likely represent, you know, if they represent one particular brand, there's a chance that they also have several other food brands, because there are a lot of PR agencies that specialize specifically in food. So if you do a good job for one of their clients, there's a high likelihood then they're going to recommend you for other clients as well. And so getting some really good PR contacts and agency relationships, and people say, well, where do I even find those? And I say, well, the secret is that those same PR people are probably running that brand's social media account, and they receive their Facebook messages, and they receive that brand's, you know, DMs on Instagram. And so a lot of the early work that I did more for brands, which is more of the work that I do today, was just, you know, purely playing around with, like, a great example was Sara Lee Pound Cake. I was doing, you know, just having fun photographing some parfaits with Sara Lee Pound Cake. And I posted the pictures online, like, hey, check it out, you know, just like we all do. Yep. And then what I did is I tagged the brand, and then I just sent a message via Facebook Messenger to the brand, to Sarah Lee, and said, hey, by the way, I just want to let you know I love your product, and here's a photo. Hope you like it, you know, and that was that. Well, a couple, you know, they just kind of responded back with a canned answer, thank you so much. But then a couple weeks later, a couple months later, I can't remember the exact timeline, but somebody reached out via Tyson Foods because they said, well, hey, we have a relationship in terms of our PR. The same people who do the PR for Sara Lee Pound Cake also handle the hot dogs and corn dogs for Tyson.
Crazy.
And we love this image that you shot. We're curious. We're in need of a photographer, and your name came up. And are you at all interested? And could we get a bid from you? And again, I was just getting started in food photography, so this was like, Tyson Foods is contacting me? What? You know, and do they know? But
how do I bid? What's this?
Oh my God. And so that's when it really helps, you know. There weren't Facebook groups when I was going through that. So fortunately, the Facebook groups exist now. There's plenty of them. I host one. There's plenty of great ones out there where you can ask a lot of questions, get great input from other food photographers on what you should be charging and
works. What's your group?
So it's the Bite Shot. We love food photography. It's
amazing.
Yeah, so there's about 5,000 food photographers in there, and people are very transparent, great about asking questions about contracts and charging and copyright, because there's a lot of that that goes into the world of photography, and especially in this day and age of brands just saying, hey, you took this picture, now can I post it on a billboard? Well, no, you cannot. I need money for that, please.
Yeah.
So that was very much how I cultivated a lot of those early relationships, was just sharing images that I was creating anyway, right? As a food photographer, you need to be taking time to, you know, create your own personal projects and explore your art. And so sharing those images, tagging the brands, making sure they saw it. You just never know when you're at the right place at the right time, when suddenly Tyson Foods corn dog division needs some photos.
But to be fair, had you not reached out to them, they wouldn't have probably seen your work. So it was luck, but you put yourself out there.
Yep. The right place, the right time. Exactly. And it's just like sales. You know, people say, oh, I got rejected by one person. Well, great. That's not the person for you. Then you need to go seek out the other 99, because inevitably you knock on 99 doors, at least one is going to say yes. So it's a numbers game. And so, you know, as a food photographer, there is a huge part of it is purely marketing yourself and making sure that the people who will make decisions have your name in mind when they get to that point.
So aside from reaching out to maybe some PR companies or doing some DM stuff on Instagram or Facebook, are there anything else that we can be doing to put ourselves in front of the right people?
You know, I think social media to me is such, like, that's how I've built my business 100%. So to me, that's the most valuable. But it's also, I think, you know, taking opportunities to, you know, take on jobs that you could connect with. You know, sometimes, especially early on, there were gigs that I was like, do I really want to do this? But, you know, I was always happy when I did, because inevitably the referrals, because to me, those are also the best kind of clients, is when they come from people you've liked working with, and making sure to follow up with those people and on a regular basis. You know, there's been some clients I've worked with for a long time, and so continuing to follow up with them, and then they put my name in other people's heads as well. And it's a helpful thing to continue to build your business.
I mean, it all back down to the sales training. It's following up. It's putting yourself out there. I think these are all very transferable skills too, guys. So no matter what industry you are in, if you are a full-time employee or if you're an entrepreneur, whatever you've got going on, this is very transferable. So take Joni's advice. I think this is super interesting.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories is how you came up with the name The Bite Shot. Can you share that? I just think it's so awesome.
Absolutely. So I had been doing a campaign because I also do videography as a part of my business that kind of evolved at a certain point. And I was doing a series of videos for Dreyer's Ice Cream. And they, as far as like the whole process of planning a video, you have a shot list, right? So it says, you know, first shot, hands enter the scene and stir the bowl, you know, and then pour the brownie mix into the pan. And so it's kind of that step by step. step process and then just the visuals associated with that. So you call that a shot list. And so the final shot in all of those videos for dryers, because it was targeting kind of like kid oriented ice cream desserts. And so it was making like ice cream sandwiches and, you know, ice cream cupcakes, all sorts of crazy stuff. And so the very last scene, the very last shot was that a kid's hand would reach in, grab the dessert, pull it out, take a bite, and then put it back in the scene. And so at the time that I was doing that, my oldest son was, he's probably about 4 or 5 years old. He was 4 years old. And so I was like, okay, buddy, you've got a big job to do. You are the final shot. All you have to do is reach in, grab the cupcake, take a bite, and put it back. And so clearly you tell a 4 year old to take a bite of a cupcake, it's not going to be a hard sell.
No.
And so by the time we got to like the third video, because he kept being called on to do this job, he said, is it time for the bite shot? Is it time for the bite shot? So that was just always something I thought was so cute. You know, the bite shot, it's that when as a food photographer, you've always got that final scene in any shoot. And if you haven't doctored it up with all sorts of weird stuff on top and haven't sprayed it down with glycerin, then you're theoretically going to eat it. And so that's the bite shot. And that's so when I started the YouTube channel, I thought, well, what would be a clever name? And that just kind of came to my mind. And fortunately, the URL was available. All the social media was available. So snag that up as quickly as possible.
That's so cool. I think that is like the cutest thing ever. So I love that story behind that too. And the business has been progressing a lot for you. So you actually just launched your first course, and I have to brag for you. You did very, very little marketing, paid marketing, I should say, for the course. And
zero paid marketing.
What the heck? And you did really well. So can you talk about this process?
Yeah, it was crazy. So in the course of, you know, cultivating my YouTube channel and a lot of the questions, I mean, at a certain point as the channel starts to grow, I get a lot of the same questions. And I live in Arizona where the light is very hard because it is sunny like 365 days a year. We don't have any clouds, so we don't get beautiful diffused light, which is really beautiful for food photography. So I always shoot with artificial light, and that is something that's very intimidating to a lot of people. And there's also a lot of misconceptions about artificial light, that it looks artificial, that it doesn't look as good as natural. And so I got a lot of questions about that. And unfortunately, that's not a topic that can be addressed in a 20-minute YouTube video. It's really more of an intensive, multi-phased course approach. And so I thought, you know, I really want to now monetize this YouTube channel. I mean, I've got affiliate sales through Amazon and B&H, which is a photography gear seller. And then I've also got, you know, the YouTube ads and some sponsored content. But I thought, you know, I see a lot of other photographers doing really well in the course space. And I think that really makes sense specifically for this topic of artificial light and shooting with flash photography. And because there's a lot of learning curve there. So I set out to put together the course, and I attended the conference that we both did in Boise. Had a really great time at that Craft and Commerce, and, you know, came away with that saying, okay, I'm ready to do this. And I had sort of originally intended to launch it in September, but I just had like this impulse to get it out faster and quicker, and thought, you know what? What's the only thing holding me back? It's myself. Like, I've got the content, I've got the outline, I just need to film these things. So, it's 13 videos under 90 minutes, just in terms of the entire content altogether, because my philosophy with a course is I want people to actually finish it. So to me, shorter is better. And so put all of that together. I was like, you know, I've seen people do these elaborate sales funnels and sales pages and websites and all the, you know, email marketing. And I mean, I've got an email list. They do great. I've got social media, but I was like, you know what I'm going to do? Like, I'm just going to rely on the value of this and the relationship I've built with my audience. And so I put it together. It took about a week in terms of filming and editing. You know, I kind of glossed over sales pages and said, you know what, like, I'll just save that for my second launch. Like, I'm not going to worry about all that stuff. I'm really just going to make sure the content itself is quality. Did a pre-sale, and, you know, $18,000 later, it was a good week.
Amazing. That is so incredible. What did you do when you saw $18,000 come through?
I mean, I was about to vomit then, because I was like, oh my gosh, like, this feels like, this is like the craziest idea, because it's more than I made my first year out of college. So I thought, holy crap, I just made the same amount in a week that I would have an entire year. But then too, there's a very intense sense of responsibility there too, that you have now received people's money. You know, it's one thing to give people free YouTube videos versus charging people $145 a pop for a course. And so it was, that was in the pre-sale period. And so then it launched August 1st. And fortunately, again, I've got an amazingly supportive family who's talking me down from the ledge, like, no, this is good. It's all going to be great. You just don't, you know, don't worry. It's all fine. Nobody's ever been, you know, because it all sounds like it's all good, right? The YouTube channel, yeah. The working for yourself, the courses, it all sounds good. But there's a lot of neuroses behind the scenes of like, oh my God, what have I done? Everybody's going to hate it. This is going to be terrible, right? Like worst case scenarios, fears, all of that stuff comes out. But fortunately, we launched August 1st and people were super excited. And now we're seeing some really great results from folks in the group. We've got a private Facebook group just for that course. And so it's really fun to see then the work that people are now creating and that they have the creative freedom, just like I discovered when I started shooting artificial light, and really getting excited and seeing new things that they didn't see know were possible and feeling super confident about it. So the value's there, which is infinitely exciting for me to know, okay, we can do this. So now, you know, as I look at subsequent courses down the road, I've got other ideas and other plans. You know, I know that even with minimal marketing and without having to feel salesy, that I can still make a really profitable and helpful course that delivers a lot of value to people without being overly taxing to me. So yeah. That's exciting.
Well, and God bless you for making it 90 minutes too.
I know, because I just because that was the other thing. I'd taken some other courses of a similar, like the same sort of topic, you know, gone on to creativelive.com and some other websites, and taken their courses, which people are like, you can do that? You can take other people's courses and then use that as research for your course? I was like, yes. I'm not. I mean, just like Pat Flynn says, there's no creative messages. It's just creative messengers. And sure. So, you know, one of the courses that I took, it was like 2 days worth, you know, 40 hours. And
oh,
I'm like,
gosh,
this is way too much. Like you have lost people. Nobody's going to finish this. So it's harder to be concise. But if you can do it, I think it delivers immense value because people can get up and running with what they're excited about immediately. They don't need to be waiting through hours and hours of course content. So, you know, anybody who's looking to create courses, don't feel like you have to make it 30 videos long. Like,
seriously.
You know, 13 videos. And what's great too is, you know, all these online platforms for courses, these are living, breathing things. So since I launched the course, you know, there was a lot of questions coming up about one particular topic that the course participants had. And so I said, okay, great. Now I can just add in an additional video so that we can now have this supplemental bonus video. And that's then additional value for people currently in the course. And then as I continue to resell the course and relaunch it in the future, there's additional value there.
What a great idea. How many people do you have on your team now?
My team? Me.
In the corporate office.
It's the corporate office. It's just me. The only thing I outsource is my design work to a local agency a branding agency that I've worked with for a long time. But otherwise, currently all the photography, videography, editing, course creation, everything, it's all a one-man band.
That's amazing. No excuses, guys. If Joni can do it, we can do it too.
Absolutely. Oh, amen, sister. You absolutely.
No, I think it's amazing. So, okay, from a financial standpoint, I can already hear people asking, if I wanted to be a food photographer or a blogger, that means my grocery bill is probably going to go up the roof. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it depends on how much you're doing, and it depends on the kind of work you're doing. But, you know, for any given recipe, if I'm blogging a recipe, you know, I need to cook the recipe a couple times to make sure it actually works, because you need sort of that integrity of the actual recipe that it works. So you need that testing period. And then you also are photographing it. And then if you're doing a video for it too, so you're making a recipe multiple times. Now, for the most part, we can also feed that to our family as leftovers, things like that. But it is sort of an additional expense. And so last year I did run the numbers as far as the additional grocery bills, and I averaged about an additional $400 a month in additional groceries. Now, you know, has it kind of lessened our personal dinner bills and things like that? So that's kind of nice. But but yeah, so that those expenses definitely do go up.
Interesting. Okay. Very, very interesting. Joni, I've had such a good time chatting with you. Do you mind doing some rapid fire questions?
I love rapid fire. Let's see how I do.
You're going to do great. Okay. So the first question, what is one purchase that you've recently made that has made your life better?
Oh man, that's a great question. Well, a new speed light.
What's a speed light for those of us that don't know?
A speed light is, it's a small flash unit, for flash photography, but this is a newer, better, fancier one that's got some extra hyphy functions on it. So it's made my life a lot easier.
Very cool. Very cool.
If you want to learn all about it, I've got a course about it.
I've heard it's amazing and very easy to go through.
Amazing. Amazing.
That's awesome. What is one location that you're dying to travel to?
Oh, I would love so many places. If I was going to hop on a plane tomorrow, I'd probably, I don't know if it's the right time of year, but I'd definitely go to Sweden.
Oh, yes. That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That would be a really good one.
I mean, I just feel like it's a very unique culture, very unique scene, definitely some great food. And some diverse food that I've not experienced before. So great, great learning opportunity, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Last question. What do you believe is the secret to financial success?
You know, I think defining financial success is a tricky thing. Because for me, it's about freedom, the ability to, do with my time what I want, while still being able to support my family at the level of lifestyle that we enjoy. So for me, it's just about understanding what's your bottom line, and what you need in order to have the life that you want to live. And I don't think it involves yachts, and I don't think it involves crazy planes. I think that it involves following your passions. And so whatever enables you to do that, that's financial success to me.
Oh, beautiful. Joni, it was so much fun chatting with you. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Thank you, Whitney. It was a pleasure.
All right. What did you guys think? I loved this episode with Joni. I thought it was so interesting to hear where she goes to find clients and ultimately how she shares a little bit more behind the scenes of her food photography business through her Instagram and YouTube channel. Amazing, amazing. You guys go check out her Instagram. I'm not a food photographer. Well, I mean, I can take like a little bit of flat lays for Insta, but that's about it. But it's amazing to see her work and how she really truly treats this as a profession and is killing it financially. So I love this, and I think you guys will really enjoy her Instagram and YouTube channels as well. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do me the biggest favor in the world. Leave a review and subscribe to the show. It means the world to me, and that's what it really helps me see like which types of guests are you really appreciating the most? Which ones are really speaking to you? And ultimately, that's what gets the show in front of more people. So if you have like 5 seconds and you wouldn't mind doing that, I would be so grateful. It does mean the world to me. All right, guys, that is it for today. I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.